This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Evolve Golf. They're a company who is absolutely committed to making products that are better for the player, the course, and the planet. You've probably seen some of their divot tools, ball markers, motion wool socks, leather works, and my personal favorite, the Epoch Golf Tee. You should go over to www.evolvegolf.com and see all the fantastic products they have that you might love to incorporate into your game. Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week, we're making our way into golf fashion, and I'm absolutely pumped about it. It's Mr. Chris Knott. He is the chief merchandising officer over there at Johnny O Apparel. Chris, it is great to have you on the show.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a title so impressive. I tripped over it twice getting through it. I would absolutely love to know what your history is with Johnny O, and then I guess just in general.
Yeah, no, it's I joined Johnny O October 2017. Came in as a really just to help be the, you know, kind of a chief merchant, really. You know, the brand was super solid, great logo, great marketing, great people, and they just need a little help with product. And you know, my background is I grew up in retail. I was a clothing rep for about 15 years. I was the founder of Peter Millar, started in 2001 and hung around till sold it in 12 and hung around till like 2015. And then I like to say I took three semesters off. And my wife said, "You got to get back to work. You're driving me crazy." So John O'Donnell was a buddy, and we had met by trying to actually buy the company back 5 years before in my past company. And and it was funny because, you know, once you're kind of getting back in the game, you get a lot of people, they wanting some help. And I just loved the brand. I mean, I thought the brand really had a wide net, and you know, it wasn't too East Coast. It wasn't too West Coast. It was kind of like, it was a very feel good brand that everybody liked, and it wasn't too precious. And the market, you know, this is pre-COVID, but that's kind of like the market was already headed that way, you know, a lot more casual, you know, the hoodies were starting to come on. And so it's just been great. Me and a past acquaintance joined the team. He joined before I did, and we just had two of us in Raleigh. And now we've moved kind of the headquarters here because all the design and sales are here. So all the meetings are here. We still have our accounting and out in California, which is great. And John O'Donnell's still out in California, and our roots are out there, and we do our photo shoots out there. But so we keep an office out there, and we got like design and sales here on the East Coast. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great to have a company who recognizes all different versions of weather. I know there are some that really favor certain styles, and that reflects the locale. But it seems like one of the more critical conversations right now is adapting to any weather scale, not just a singular one.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Like when you look around in my background here, you got all these products, and especially in the golf business, they get delivered differently also, you know. So like, you know, spring in Florida and Arizona starts a lot earlier than it does in Long Island. So you've kind of got to understand all that, you know, and I've been fortunate enough to travel kind of all around the U.S. and pretty much around the world to understand, you know, climates and weights and things like that. So when we do design things, we usually have like a light, medium, and heavier weight. And then that way you cover every climate, you know, that's going to come across you.
Yeah. I was going through the show notes, and am I correct in understanding that this is the 20th year for Johnny O this year?
It really is. Yeah, this is it. And back, John O'Donnell, I don't know if you know the story, but he was out in L.A. Working in advertising, you know, played golf at UCLA, but he was an East Coast, or he grew up in Winnetka, you know, Illinois. So kind of a more of a traditional town. And he was out in California and was like, kind of seeing like, hey, everybody out here wears surf clothes, you know, and they really do, because, you know, everybody, we call it Velcro Valley for a reason. You know, everybody, you know, kind of grew up out there, and that's just, they wear longer shorts and they wear a lot of surf stuff. So he kind of came up with this idea, West Coast meets East Coast, and came up with the logo or the mark. And it was just like a natural, you know. And then he was off and running. He was doing, you know, home shows and selling stuff to his buddies. And it was just one of those. I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, you know, it's not a critter. You know, it's not another animal that everybody, you know, was putting, I call them critters on shirts at the time. And this was one, I was like, you know, look, this thing is really cool. Like we met at the PGA show, John had a blender and a Home Depot umbrella, and it was like the coolest booth there. And I think he spent about $82 on it. So anyway, that's kind of how it all was born. And it started out with kind of the, you know, a cotton shirt. And back, you know, in 2006, you know, cotton shirts were heavier, you know, they weren't as fine as they are now. Yarns were a little rounder, and it was like a little more, you know, back then we're all wearing beefy tees, you know, think about all your t-shirts were beefy tees. And that was kind of the weight of the shirt. So a lot of folks that bought those shirts originally have missed them because, you know, they just kind of get worn out, and they get worn in. So we brought back the original. So the original shirt's a 4-button applied placket shirt with a pocket. We brought the exact shirt back, same factory, same yarn maker, and the exact same Pantone colors. So it's pretty cool. So we're doing a big 20th anniversary on it. So if anybody bought one of those back in the day, they're going to get a chance. And we didn't make a ton of them. It's going to be kind of like a limited supply. But okay. They're going to feel heavier than what's out there now because they're different now. The world has gotten, you know, yarns have gotten more technical and stretch has come into play. But it's kind of a cool, you know, it's a cool concept to do it.
Yeah. From my perspective, I certainly don't have a 20-year history with Johnny O. I feel like there's a level of connection to the golf brand that has really taken hold over the last 5 years or so. I'll say that from a perspective of going to my home golf course, we spend a fair bit of time at THP Experiences at the different Dormy Network properties, and they all represent Johnny O very well. Has there been a very specific and pointed push to golf over the last, let's say, half decade?
Yeah, there has. It's like, we're not a golf line, meaning, you know, we weren't born just to sell golf courses, but what we are is a lifestyle line. And what's happened is, you know, whether you're a dentist or a bond trader, everybody's kind of wearing the same stuff to work now. You know, it's comfortable. A lot of it's performance driven. And I think a lot of that has to do with easy care. It's not like you're sitting in an office that's 100 degrees, but you know, you pull the shirt or the quarter zip or the, you know, whatever technical fleece out of your washer or dryer, and it looks like it's been dry cleaned. You know, it's great stuff. So my background had a golf slant to it. John's background, he was very connected in golf because he's a great player and he had access to a bunch of clubs, but we really put the foot on the gas probably back around 2017 to do more golf inspired product, you know, which is really good. We dived into performance and good performance a little deeper because we had a background in that, and that was easy just to bring those factories and mills on because we understood it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. There's always a trick with golf. You know, there are a couple things that really check the box. I think you can get away. I like to joke around where I get a polo and I'm like, I can get away in all situations with that polo. And you know, that's something that doesn't necessarily need to be thought of with some material, but for golf, it's highly critical, at least from where I live. Wear the heavier stuff in the winter, wear the lightest stuff possible with the best wicking material. Yes. In the summer, you know, that there's a lot of variant there, but there seems to be a level of consistency across a lot of brands, and I think that sort of kept a lot of golfers in a pretty small pocket of expectation when it comes to what they expect to get. Can you explain or share some depth from a material perspective when it comes to the different types of product you'd put out for golf? So, you know, maybe start with the polo and then move into some other options from there.
No, that's a great question. Like, you know, back when we were all wearing natural fibers, like, you could tell a good cashmere sweater from a cheap one, just, you know, because they were natural fibers. Of course, the little short hairs went to the cheap ones, the longer, finer, fibers went to the more expensive. Well, when you get into polyesters and spandex and nylon, all that stuff kind of looks and feels the same, you know, but it's not the same. It's like anything else. It's like I always say, if you're going to bake a cake and you want to make the best one, you got to start with the best ingredients. And, you know, if you're kind of using okay flour and okay this and okay that, your cake's only going to come out but so good. So the first thing with anything you make in clothing, you've got to start with the best fiber and the best, you know, who's making the best of the best, you know, yarn that you're going to knit or weave that garment out of. So the Taiwanese have kind of been famous for being way ahead in performance fabrics. They got into the outdoor market way before any of the other Asian companies got into it. And Japan's a little bit into it, but it's too expensive because of labor costs. So anyway, you kind of got to go to, you got to know where to go to get the really good stuff. And, you know, back in 2001, where you couldn't go to the PGA show and all these vendors were sitting there showing it to you because, you know, you had to jump on a plane and go around the world and figure out who had the good stuff. And that's what I did, you know, and I look back at it, you know, some crazy stories, maybe over a beer sometimes, but, you know, back then, you know, going to Beijing, China, there were half bicycles on the road, half cars. I mean, it was behind back then. Of course, now it's caught up. So start out with the best yarn, you know, which are certain people that spend the best yarn. It's more expensive. You got to know where to get it. And then you've got to knit it. Let's just say a golf shirt. You got to knit it properly. Like it's got to have the right knit structure. You know, the machine that knits a golf shirt looks like a little nuclear reactor. You know, it's this round, it's called circular knitting. And it just goes around and, you know, knits this fabric. You're like, how the heck does it do it? But those machines have to be the best, you know, and it has to have the right tension and it's got to run the right speed. So, but then once you get all that out, you've got to take the fabric, you got to be able to finish it. You know, like it's got to go through heat and steam and all these things that make that great fabric that's been knitted right perform right. You know, it's like baking a cake, you know, you got it all mixed up. Now you got to put it in the oven at the right temperature, you know, blah, blah, blah. But once all that fabric comes out, and this is the part that, you know, if we were in a store, I could show you the difference. We call it, on my side of the industry, we call it, you gotta make where they have a great needle. And what that means is not everybody sews a shirt the same way. Or, you know, and usually it comes down to the hands running the machines and the type of the machines and how many stitches per inches and how much you're pressing every time you sew. So when you look at a Johnny O golf shirt and the collar is just beautiful and it's not puckering and you put it on every day after you wash and it's like that. Well, there's about 35 steps that go into it to make one knit shirt, you know, and a ton of minutes go into the shirt. So what we like to do is every time we sew, we press, and then it gets passed on. You sew, you press, you sew, you press. So when you do that, you're basically forming the garment as you go. And then when it comes out and it gets on you, it's really beautiful. And then you've got to spec out, I want, you know, 18 stitches per inch. You know, like if you're buying a shirt and you can, you know, without readers, you can see and count the stitches. That means they're making it really fast and it doesn't have enough stitches per inch. So you can make more, which is cheaper for the factory. So we spec all that out. And we spec out the buttons. We spec out the links. We spec out the labels. So when you do all that stuff and get it right, you got a chance of having a really great shirt.
You know, I love you going to that level of depth because I had three things written down in terms of what I'm looking for in a shirt. And you just nailed all the things I don't think about, right? Like my first thought is the touch aspect. Does it feel right? That's a huge component for golf shirts for me. I don't want it to feel cheap, but I also don't want it to feel too thick. We're pretty needy, let's be honest, as golfers from what we're looking for. But then there's another component to that. And I imagine this is an incredibly challenging piece to the puzzle for you. It needs to have some pretty good stretch. Like we are a little bit athletic as golfers and we need to be able to turn in it and not pull. Sure. So tell me about stretch and how it all incorporates into that.
Yeah, that was the part I left out. Now, if you go back and look at, say, a polyester golf shirt you may have bought 10 years ago, it may just be all polyester, right? But now if you look, you see a lot of spandex. And spandex is just a brand name for elastane yarn. So when they're knitting this thing, we have these spandex feeders, you know, that is this little almost see-through, you know, yarn that's very thin that gets knitted into the knit structure of the garment. And then not everybody can do four-way stretch. So when you talk about four-way stretch, it stretches this way. This, you know, it stretches all four ways. You can get a lot of two-way stretch, but I used to make two-way stretch golf shirts because I didn't know how to make four-way. But once I figured out how to make the four-way, you'll never go back. And what that helps is like your armholes on the garment, you know, like that's where when you're swinging or, you know, you want them to stretch this way, all the way. So all the fabrics we use are four-way stretch. And that's a big deal. And like, if you were to go to say a big box golf shop and see a $59 knit shirt, it's probably just all polyester. And it's probably two-way stretch because it's cheaper. It's cheaper to make it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I remember 15 or 20 years ago, you had to buy a shirt that was as long as possible because, you know, as you swing, it would get loose on you, but it would still stay tucked in. There's nothing more irritating to me than tucking my shirt in. And then, you know, throughout the entirety of the round, because it doesn't have enough stretch in it, it comes flying out and I got to put it right back in there. And it's just, you know, I prefer a shirt that I feel like feels great, but I don't recognize I'm even wearing it. I just want it to be a part of me by the end of the round. Do you know what I mean by that?
That's 100% right. And the thing about these new performance shirts, if we're talking golf here, and that does dominate the golf business, like if you're in Long Island or, you know, somewhere like San Diego or somewhere where the weather never gets crazy hot, you know, they'll sell some cotton shirts. You know, it's not like it's gone, but the golf business is dominated by these higher end performance fabrics. But the other thing is they're a little bit slipperier than cotton, you know? So, you know, when you tuck them in your pants, you know, we put like gripper waistbands in our golf shorts to kind of hold the shirt in, even though we make the shirt longer because it's meant to be tucked in our golf shirts. You know, we don't skimp on that. And it may cost $1.50 more a shirt to make that tail 2 inches longer, you know, the shirt, but nothing worse than a golf shirt coming out. So we do fight it that way. Four-way stretch helps, longer tails, and putting grippers in our shorts, because that's a pet peeve of mine too.
Yeah. I mean, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but there are a couple different structures to your golf polos. I was actually having a conversation with my friend Josh this past weekend. We were talking about the difference between your standard performance and then your you have a featherweight.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So basically in knit shirts, you have two knit structures. You have mesh. Some people call it piqué, which is basically like the old Lacoste. You know, if you think about, you know, a piqué shirt's got a little texture to it. And that knit structure, when you look at it, has holes in it, which is really the coolest shirt you can wear because the holes allow the air to come through. Mesh in performance got a bad rap early on because it picked. They didn't have it figured out 10 years ago. And a lot of people still do pick. Ours doesn't. We use a dull finish yarn. It doesn't pick. I bite my nails. I can scratch a shirt and it doesn't pick. I always do it. Now, you run into a thorn bush or get your Velcro on your glove or something, you know, you may have a problem. But so then you've got jersey. Jersey is the smooth, flat shirt you see most of the prints on. So jersey is a smooth knit that's a little flatter and smoother. Mesh has a little bit of the texture and a little bit, like if you look at a light, you'll see the holes in it. We sell more jersey. And the reason we do is I think it just looks more expensive than a mesh shirt, you know, because a lot of the prints are on jersey. They just come up cleaner. But I wear a lot of the mesh because I know I don't want to be hot when I'm playing golf. And that shirt is by far, it doesn't stick. It's everything about it is fantastic. So mesh and jersey. And then within the jersey, we have a featherweight, which is about 30 grams per square meter lighter than a normal golf shirt. And that's a big deal for people that like a really lightweight shirt that doesn't, you know, that you layer over or you're in a hot weather where you're, where you want to be as cool as possible. A normal golf shirt done properly out of our high-end fabric, it's like 165 grams per square meter. That's 130, 135 grams per square meter. And it's lighter. It's light. The featherweight is lighter.
Okay. I'd love to know about fit a bit more. I think this is a conversation we have all the time on the THP forum, the community we have, talking about what fits right and what doesn't. And I think, you know, there's no simple solution to this between height and weight and simple factors like that, muscle, being a bit of a twig like I am. Like there's just no really clean balance between everything. So I imagine that's one of the more significant challenges you guys face.
Yeah, I think the trick is you want to fit that kind of works. You know, like if there's a group of guys of eight, you know, you want to be able to fit all those guys. And here's how we do it. There's no secret, but if a guy, we like to say we have a current fit. And what I mean by that, it means it's not modern, but it's not a classic big fit. It's current. And what I mean by that is it's comfortable in the shoulders. So nobody wants anything tight. We don't want it grabbing the armhole. But when you get into the sleeves, what makes a shirt really look bad on a guy if the sleeves are too long and too wide? Same thing on a sport coat. Like if you look at a sport coat in your closet that's 10 years old, the end of the cuff is probably laying flat. It's probably 6 inches, and now they're less than five. So you can taper them from the elbow down at a local tailor, and it'll kind of modernize your sport coat. But sleeves and waist on a shirt is really where you have to be really careful not to look too big. So we like to say we have a current fit. We, in our smalls and mediums, we deal with a lot of assistant golf pros right out of college. They're flat bellies. You know, they don't want anything too big. That we grade each size on its own. A lot of people will say, here's a perfect medium. They'll grade it backwards on a computer. They'll grade it forward on the computer. We don't do that. We get the medium that we think fits the guy that we're going after, which is a little bit trimmer for that guy, because that guy's a medium. He's a pretty trim guy. Smalls and mediums are one size. Then you jump into a large, which I am. You know, I'm a 43 coat and a 35, 36 waist. My large and Johnny O trims me up, but it's very comfortable. It makes me look trimmer and more athletic than I am. I really got a body by Budweiser. It's terrible. But anyway, it's and that's the magic of it. So, but if a guy is a little more fit and say he's a 42 coat and a 34 waist, we call it an 8-inch drop, our large looks good on him because the waist isn't too big and the sleeves aren't too big. Now, when you get into an extra large, there's a reason that guy's an extra large. So not only are the point to points wider, but guys are wider this way too. You know, like you know your buddies that are extra larges and double X's, you turn them this way, they're big this way too sometimes. They're just big guys, you know. Mm-hmm. It could be ex-jocks, whatever. So we want that guy to be comfortable. So if you're an XL or double X, they like our shirts. But yet again, we still don't have sloppy sleeves and a lot of sloppiness everywhere else. Another trick we do is, I'll grab a shirt, is you look at guys on TV every week, and collars, if they get too big, they get heavy. All of these fabrics are so light today that we actually have to put extra fusible in the collar to keep it up because they're so light, they want to flop. We also put extra fusible in the placket or the spine of the shirt. So when you're wearing this shirt, it sits on you all day long, just like you want it to. You know, the collars aren't curling. We have a little bit of a, you know, plastic stay in here that's permanent. But that's what you want. You want this thing to look the same all day. But if the collar gets big, you watch golf this week. Guys that are wearing collars too big, they tend to flop over because they get heavy. So that's a little bit of a trick of ours too. Like, we don't want the collars so big. They tend to do better.
Yeah, I think collars are both the most overthought and underthought thing in a golf polo, depending on who you're talking about. I think guys have their preferences when it comes down to how they want it to sit on them. I've never met a person who is genuinely excited when it's just laying there open and sort of splattered across their chest. I'm glad to hear that there's a lot of attention to that. And my curiosity is definitely getting the best of me. Why does that matter so much to you? Is it because it's one of the most visible components of the polo?
It is. And what happens, the other thing is where you place your buttons. This is all I do. So like if I'm in an airport, I'm looking at where some guys are way up here. And then when the higher you go and button a shirt, the more it pulls. It just does. It does a dress shirt or a golf shirt. So, you know, you see guys walk around the airport all buttoned up and they got this big pulling across there. You start to look for it. You'll see it. So we also, like, we will sit here and put like a Sharpie magic marker on where the button should hit you perfect so that everybody kind of buttons it in the same place. So we have kind of perfected that and it's awesome. So before, when we first started making like performance golf shirts, we didn't have that quite perfected. And I'd watch my buddy, some of them would have it down here and it'd be flopping open. And then when you went too high, you've got that. Now with the way we do the buttons, whether it's a three button or a two button, the button's hitting you right where you want it to hit you. And 20 out of 21 guys will button in the same place because it's natural. So why let them mess it up and make that mistake? You know, on our woven shirts, John and Donald invented the tweener button that solves that problem because you can do that on a woven shirt because of the way the placket's made and you got a little more room there.
Interesting. So
it's really cool. Like I love watching the tour guys wearing our stuff on TV where you can see it all day long. It's just right there.
Yeah. I have more questions about the actual apparel, but I'd love to slide a little bit into that sort of component of it is having people present your brand. And I think as well, you have some connections between some of the major sports leagues as well. Why does that matter so much? Why do you want people out there wearing your product?
Well, I think today, you know, we live in we live in a society where everything's at your fingertips, right? Social media. You can watch TV. I'm a YouTube TV guy at home. So, now I'm in the airport watching golf because I'm a golf nut. So you just have access to so much more today. So to me, it's not about us going out and signing 50 golfers and hoping these guys win, you know, a tournament because, you know how that is. It's hard to do. And usually the super high-end golfers are getting paid a crazy amount of money to get to wear the big athletic brands. So, you know, I think these influencers, all of that, you know, all the what we call the, you know, the natural ground, you know, ground attack works really well for us also. And it's just brand awareness. I mean, we live in a branded world, you know, and like that's something I like to talk about. Like Johnny O is a brand. It's not a label. I mean, you can go in a golf shop and you can see like a nice little line over there. You've seen it your whole life. It's probably doing the same amount of business it was doing 10 years ago. It's a nice living for someone. But to be a brand, you got to have marketing behind it. And it's always moving, you know, and it's like, as soon as you think it's one thing, it's another thing, you know, just like your business, you know. So how are you going to reach people with your podcast? So I'm not a marketing guy. I mean, I'm a product and sales guy, but I'm fascinated by how fast the marketing is constantly changing. Now with golf, I feel like it gives you an avenue to speak to a certain customer base. Like you can't go, you know, you can't go put a Johnny O logo on an NBA shirt or NFL player shirt on TV. So I think it's kind of interesting how golf allows you. I mean, really golf and NASCAR really allows you to do it. So, but you know, with Dave Neville coming on board and his background, you know, at, you know, Titleist and Callaway, I've learned a lot from him just on, you know, how it really works. You know, how do you spend your money in that environment?
Okay. Yeah, I think there's an interesting avenue between golf apparel versus golf product. You know, you want to go hit it just as badly as you want to the new driver, just as badly as you want to go try on the new polo or the one you see. For me, it's a very touchy type of subject. Like if there's a product I'm looking for and I like the way it looks either on a player or some of the patterns, that's not enough for me. I need to go and connect with it, touch it, feel exactly what it's got going on, and then put it on for myself. So is a lot of this like sort of that point of entry where you've got people hooked from a visual perspective, and now you want to go and touch some of the really high quality materials you've used to create this product?
No, that's a great question. And look, that's the beauty of a brand like us who started out in wholesale. Like, you know, we've got 2,500 golf accounts, you know, that throughout America. We've got 600 specialty stores. We've got bookstores. You know, we feel like our products in all the right places where our customer is. You know, he may not be a golfer, but he may be at the Notre Dame bookstore watching a football game and he wants a great polo or quarter zip or sweatshirt or whatever. That's an advantage of a brand like ours. These brands that are just D to, you know, direct to consumer, you know, I think they kind of start out fast, but they can kind of slow down fast also. And what I mean by that is sooner or later, they're going to want to get into wholesale, right? If you start out direct to consumer. Well, if you've gone into it and you've built all your margins and everything direct to consumer, now you're going back to the retailer who needs a certain margin to pay his bills. It's kind of hard to go backwards sometimes, if that makes sense, because you didn't build your brand that way to begin with. What I love about what we do here, our wholesalers love us because we let them make money on the product. It's not a one-way street. We do fine. And they don't really care that we're selling online because, you know, that's just a part of being a brand today. We have to price it the same and all that stuff. We do suggested retails, but we believe in value. Like, we're not trying to be the most expensive. We're not trying to be the cheapest, but we think everything we do has value. So when we price a line out, like I'm sitting here with 600 SKUs behind me, we'll look at some and go, man, that is a great jacket, but at $228, we're going to sell X amount. At $198, we can sell triple because it just feels like it. So we'll go back to our vendor and be like, hey, we need some help here. You know, what is it going to take? And then we work it out, and then the consumer wins. And that's a big deal. A lot of companies right now are just raising prices to raise prices. It hasn't really gone up. You know, when we had all the high shipping costs with COVID, that was a real deal. You know, and if you're in a country where you got a lot of tariffs, shame on you. You should have already been out of there, you know, but we're in good shape right now. So Johnny O is positioned well to keep driving our business and not pass it on to the consumer because we're not running our business properly. And that's important. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I think a lot about, and this is purely a reflection of how I operate as a product consumer. If I touch or experience something that I'm not particularly excited about, it will definitely push me away from the brand a little bit, and adversely, I love to ride the wave. If I get an experience with something that I absolutely love, it tends to fill my closet very quickly. But a lot of that has to do with that forward-facing experience, where if I have it locally or I experience it. So, for example, in my pro shop, they have Johnny O. So it's like there's a wave of excitement that comes with finding the right material, the right shirt. The question I'd like to ask here is, do you ever worry that each material you use or each shirt you sell has the same sort of quality as the next? And does everything in your lineup stand on its own? So effectively, people can get excited about all things in your lineup, and there's no fear that one thing might be inferior to the rest.
No, you've got to have that. Once you get to our level, like, you can't go, you know, it's a lot of ways to cheat, you know, like, and it doesn't look like you're cheating, but then you know, 6 months later, the customer knows that just wasn't quite the same, you know. So like, just here in this office where you design, I mean, we have, you know, 3 full-time fit people that measure everything, top of production samples, everything, or top of production garments. Like, I've never seen a company that we test every zipper. We test every pin that goes in the shirt or clip. Today, you can't get caught cheating or speeding, as we like to say. So if you like our golf shirt, which is kind of a base item, then you're going to have the same quality passing right through to our zip necks and things. And there were vendors that when our team got here that were great people that we bought from, they just didn't have the quality we needed, and we had to move on, you know, and they just never dealt with the quality level that we needed. So I always say, like, I don't want to be in a factory that's making, you know, goods over here for, you know, JCPenney. No, nothing wrong with JCPenney. It's a different customer, because it goes back to how is those sewing machines working? What is the quality control? Everything, like, and I'm not using them as an example, but like, you need to be in a factory that's making. I'd rather see them making something more expensive a luxury brand out of Europe or something, then that way you know the quality control is going to be there. But you don't want to be the most expensive thing in it, like in a factory, kind of like you don't be the most expensive house in a neighborhood. You want that factory. And we don't jump around factories a lot. We like to be loyal and we like to feed the people that take care of us. That's why we deliver on time. We become very important to our vendors, whether it's fabric, the sewers, you know, the freight forwarders, whatever. We want to be important to them so that we can get to market. Today, this is an interesting fact. Things take longer to make today than they did 15 years ago. And you go, why is that with all the technology and everything? Well, used to, everything was just was either cotton or wool, or it was all these natural fibers. All those yarns were just sitting on the shelf. Then you would take them and knit them the way you want, dye them up. Now it's not like that. Every yarn that's being used these days is exotic. You know, it's cotton, modal, spandex, tencel. It's, you know, it's all these exotic yarns that have to be made up when you place your order, which is kind of interesting. So our lead times are longer, which means we have to work further in advance and buy it even more blind before we sell it. So we have to be right.
Interesting. One of the, we talked a lot about that sort of forward-facing component of being in pro shops, and the colors certainly play a role. One of the big things that plays a role, I think, for a lot of golfers is presentation from a, not a material, but a color or a pattern or whatever it might be. Yeah. What are the challenges of staying fresh or staying present in terms of color, and it, how often do you make those big shifts? Is it based on research you do into what's coming? How does that work?
Well, men are a lot easier than women, you know, because like they're driven. Like men, the men's business is a lot simpler, you know, color, story, fit, and all that stuff than say women. But at the end of the day, if you look in your closet, men wear a lot of blue, you know, so you're gonna have five shades of blue.
Yeah, but guilty.
But what we don't do, I kind of joke. I had a buddy of mine at Sea Island say that to me one time. Like, you can never have enough blue as a buyer. But how do you make it look different? And how do you make it wearable for a guy? Like, you know, a guy doesn't want his buddies joking him. We don't go to a fashion show in Paris and let Pantone tell us that chartreuse green is the newest color menswear, because it doesn't affect us. It may be in that runway super fashion stuff where they're selling, you know, 50 of them for the whole country, but we try to keep what I call wearable colors. And then you know, and men just are not going to wear, but, and we also know who our customer is. You know, you got, you know, if you're going to run the race, you got to know where the finish line is. Like, I mean, you know, our customer doesn't wear as much black as probably as a Hugo Boss customer wears in black. It's just our brand doesn't stand for that. We sell more navy, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So we always mix up the colors, but there's like, there's always going to be kind of the basic core 12 colors. And then they may just change a little bit up and down. And, you know, and like a little bit of khaki is always good in a shirt, just because men wear a lot of tan or stone color bottoms, you know? So there's little tricks like that, that you can put in it. Right now, a big trend is like, still printed shirts are kind of popular, but the prints are getting tighter. They're getting more geometrical. They're not quite as busy. Like, you know, they're not, we're going to have some really fun prints, but we're not going to make our living selling big exploded fun prints. We're going to have some, but we're not, out of 120 shirts, we'll have three or four, you know, where some people that that's all they do, you know, they're going to have to figure out how to, you know, reinvent themselves a little bit, just cause, you know, your closet can get a little full and that stuff.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Tell me a bit more about, some of the warmer wear, like, quarter zips or sweatshirts. I know personally for me, when it comes to polos, I want something that's light, breathable, and again, not something I'm going to bake in during the summer. But when you go to those, secondary layers, there's a desire of comfort and, sure, almost like something that would hug me more than it would be tech forward. So what's that like for you guys? Is there a balance there?
Yes. And that's where, you know, if you look back 10 years ago and you walked in a golf shop, most of the layering, or maybe 15s, were sweaters, you know, different weights, merinos, alpacas, cashmeres. But the problem with the sweaters, even if you knit you know, some Lycra spandex in them, they bag out because it's a totally different way of knitting it. You know, when I talked about that nuclear reactor looking like what a circular knit shirt machine looks like, well, now those machines also make layering piece fabrics. So they have all that four-way stretch, and you can knit them different than a flat knit sweater machine would knit them, and they wear different. So for me, and you could throw them in your washing machine. I joke about it, like go back 15 years ago and look at your dry cleaning bill and look at it today. I mean, it's a huge difference. I mean, there's no shoe shine guys left in the airports. There's a reason why, you know, like nobody's wearing leather bottom shoes because they figured out the rubber bottom shoes are more comfortable. You know what I mean? Like things like that have changed, and I don't really see it changing back. Yeah, there's going to be a little cotton resurgence, but it's like cotton blended with stuff. You know, it's the cotton feel, but people are not going to give up that easy performance, you know, wearability, travel factor, and all that stuff. So when we get into layering, it's just like the knit shirts. It starts with the fiber. And it's like I'm looking at my layering right here, and we kind of do it by weight, you know, so you know, lightweight, medium weight, heavier weight. And then we'll have some things like we have a lodge collection, which are truly like I'm sitting out at the oyster roast and it's 40 degrees. I'm shucking oysters. That's not so golf driven. You know, those things can tend to be a little more woolly, you know, a little more lifestyle driven. But the golf wear needs to perform. And all these yarns have different properties. You know, some are great at breathing. Some are great at warmth. Some are great at repelling water. So you had today, you can design into what you want it to do. You know, I like I don't ever need heavy rain gear. Like if I'm where it's cold, like it was in Ireland this summer, I had a sweater on, but I wanted my rain gear light, you know? So we have lightweight rain gear that stretches the noisy, you know, that's kind of like, you know, you can get warm by putting on a layering piece you would ski in if you wanted to stay warm, but you don't need to go put on a heavy jacket, right? So everything's got lighter. Footwear's lighter now. Go put on I got an old pair of FootJoy alligator shoes that I thought was a big deal when I bought them. Like if I wore those now, I mean, I'd have to change it, you know, the turn because they're so heavy, you know, because I got the leather bottoms on them, you know, and the leather was heavy. So, that you know, that's what's really changed is I think in performance is not just about heat. It's about weight also. I'm even funny about hats now. I don't want a hat that's too heavy. You know, it gives you head fatigue, right? So I don't know that people are going to go back to wearing heavy anything now because the performance fabrics and yarns, you don't have to anymore. People don't wear top coats anymore. You know, I used to go to New York for market. I had this giant camel hair coat that would barely fit in the overhead. You know, now I've got a coat I can fold up that I can put in my briefcase and it keeps me warm, you know?
Sure. Yeah. It's a really interesting balance. I remember it was either last year or the year before we had some Johnny O hoodies in the pro shop and I'm like touching this thing. And I'm just thinking, this is so comfortable to touch. It's crazy. And where a year or two prior to that, I was purely into tech for a quarter zip. It's all I wanted. And then suddenly I'm like, oh, well, maybe I want a little comfort too. It's not the worst thing in the world, because I feel like there's been a bit of a shift. The word cloud's used a lot in the industry now. I think the idea is just soft, light, and comfortable is a bigger story.
That's kind of how I dress. Like I pretty much wear my golf shirts to play golf in, you know, just because. But I love putting on our cotton blended, you know, cotton model spandex original, because, you know, when you put that on in the morning, it just feels great. And then I'll put on a layering piece because you're coming to an office that's got air conditioning or heat, you know. So like for me, I'm not really ever walking around in a short sleeve shirt much because I like wearing layering because, you know, you're in air conditioning, whatever. But depending on what time of the year it is kind of what weight I will pick, you know, and it does matter. Like when you can sit here on today, like today, it's 65 and, you know, you could wear what I call like a heavy twill stretch five pocket, but if it were 100 with the humidity we have and you had to spend some time outside, you could feel the difference. You know, you won't feel it inside, but you'll feel it outside. But we sell a lot of cashmere blended, merino blended, cotton blended. Like there's a shift to those things coming back, but a lot of it, we have a term called top spin, how do you give it a little topspin to where it kind of performs like your more techie stuff, but it looks and feels like what you're talking about, the warm and fuzzy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been an absolute adventure learning more about the brand today. I'll tell you what, there's so much that we've seen in pro shops, or at least personally, that I'm super excited about. I'd love for some final thoughts in terms of Johnio as a golf specific brand, where you kind of set yourself up in the industry, and then what maybe we can look forward to in the future of Johnio as it relates to golf.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the golfer, like if you're a golfer and you travel and you play and you do the whole deal, I think your brand has to show up at the right places. You know, I could count on one hand the clubs that we're not selling in the U.S. And it's for, you know, it's not bad, but we sell, you know, 99.9% of all the great clubs. And to me, what happened is the golf club, like if a guy was not wearing suits to work anymore, and a lot of people, you know, didn't frequent their men's specialty stores much. And that's where I grew up, was in the men's specialty business. So they were fine buying all their apparel at the golf club, you know, and that's kind of what happened. It wasn't like you're buying golf brands. Like you started buying these, what I call kind of specialty brands at your golf club. And they love it because they get to wear the logo and supports it and all that stuff. So to me, being in the right places, you know, private clubs, resorts, the right tournaments, being positioned at the U.S. Open and the Players Championship and all these places, that elevates your brand, right? Because that's what everybody, it tells you belong in this class of brands. It's hard to get to. Like, I'm glad I got here when I did, because I think it would be harder today to do it than it was back in 18 when I got here. You know, they were on their way, but it's gotten harder, so much competition. So I think your brand positioning has to be in the right place, and then you can keep it elevated. It doesn't mean it has to be more expensive, or just being expensive doesn't mean it's better, but being positioned right will keep it, you know, will keep people's eyes on it. I think you've got to be in multiple verticals today. I think there's a lot of guys wearing a lot of golf shirts and what you call golf quarter zips that don't play golf at all, but they like to watch golf. My dad doesn't play golf at all, but that's the sport he watches, and he dresses like we're dressed, you know. So we're very fortunate in that we have a little wider net that where we can go sell a really cool outdoor store. Like, they want that Johnio SoCal lifestyle. We can sell a lot of shops around. They're not really true surf shops where they're like selling surfboards, but they're in the towns where they're beach. That's where you go to buy your Yeti cooler. And, you know, when you're at the beach, and like, that's where the men shop. So we're very unique in the way we are in these different verticals. And I think that's unique about the brand. So it has a wider net. And I think anybody looking at this brand and wanting to know what's the most interesting thing about it, it's a generational brand also. Like, the kids are wearing it, the little young guys are wearing it when they're 8, 9 years old. The kids are wearing it when they go off to college. The dads are wearing it, and the granddads are wearing it. It's a true generational brand. And that's yeah. rare. That's very rare. And yeah. now the moms and, you know, we're not saying the young girls aren't wearing it. We don't make young girls clothes. But it was a funny story when I was trying to figure out my next chapter of my life. I was down in Palm Beach, and I was at the Publix. And I was trying to figure out, like, man, am I going to go – work with these guys, or is it just a flash in the pan? And I'll never forget it. And I was talking to them, and I was going down this like really cool, you know, rich Palm Beach guy, had his horn rim glasses on. He was about 80, had his shorts, and he had a pair of Alden quarter vin loafers on and a Johnny O shirt. And I thought, if that guy's wearing it, then it's going to be easy to get these other guys to wear it. And that was like the aha moment for me. And I loved it, because here I was pushing my cart, and here's a, you know, no telling who the guy was, and he's wearing Johnny O. Now, he may have gotten it turned on from it, from his club. He could have gotten turned on from his grandson. Who knows? But he was wearing it, and I liked that. And I thought, bam, that's cool. Yeah.
That's great. And it was a guy on a surfboard, not a critter running around in a shirt, right?
One critter. Exactly. Yeah. Well,
Chris, I really appreciate the time today. There is a wave of excitement for Johnio. There's a lot of people in our community who swear by the product and the brand already. So it's nice to see that. And I really appreciate you taking the deep dive on product today, because you know, we're all curious for sure.
Yeah, we like doing it. And you asked some good questions. If you came up with those on your own, you're a real clothing guy. You need to come down here and visit us.
Yeah. I mean, hey, listen, we pay good money for it and we have high expectations. And it's just nice to know there are brands out there trying to do the best with the best materials to make sure we're comfy out there.
That's great. Yeah, well, keep in touch. And it was great spending time with you.
Thank you. Hey, if you are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. You're probably going to see some Johnny O in the pro shop. So at least touch it. Feel it for yourself. Maybe try it on. See if you love it. And let us know in the THP community if you are a big fan of the brand. And if not, yeah, go check it out for yourself. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, mad scientist Don Brown back at Shaft University this week. This week's question is about my bag. And the question was, because I'm in charge of the R&D efforts, do I play some radical prototypes or I just play stuff out of the line? And the answer is, it depends on what week it is. Obviously I have access to as many golf shafts as I want in my own building studio, so I can change shafts every week. By and large, I'm usually playing something in the line or something that's a prototype that's about probably 3 to 6 months out. So right now my bag, in my driver, I have the brand new Hazardous. In my utility wood, I have an Acura TZ5. I'm playing Project X Red in my irons and good old trusty Dynamic Gold in the wedges, because it's the best wedge shaft in the world for a reason. Hope that tells you guys a little bit about my bag, what I play, and about how I choose my shafts. Talk to you guys next week.